Last time we were here together in Miami, I believe, was during the FTAA summit, where we were hardly in these kinds of... are you cheering for the FTAA or for those of us who were in the streets protesting against the FTAA? This is a much nicer venue. There's no tear gas or rubber bullets being fired yet. A lot of times when people come to Miami, they go to South Beach or something, they're like, oh, there's P. Diddy or there's, LeBron James. Last night, Naomi and I were so excited that we were hanging out with Jane Mayer of the New Yorker magazine. We wrote one of the definitive books on the torture apparatus in the White House, and I encourage people to see her later today with Chris Hedges and Leila Alarian and others at 4 o'clock. I want to begin by saying that I'm really honored to be on this stage today with my friend Naomi Klein. She's just an incredible freedom fighter for democratic movements around the world, as well as the movement to democratize the media in this country, and I feel really honored to call her a dear friend. I'm going to begin today by telling a story that sort of, I think, captures much of what has happened in Iraq over the past more than 5 years with the radical privatization of the U.S. war machine. And it's a story that many of you are probably familiar with to one degree or another, but I'm going to talk about some of the details of it, the human side of it, that maybe you are not so aware of. And this particular incident happened a little bit after noon on September 16, 2007. A young Iraqi medical student named Ahmed Haitham al-Rubai was driving in his family's car, running errands with his mother, Mahassan, who was a doctor. And they pulled into an intersection in the Mansour district of Baghdad, an area known as Nisr Square. And at the time that Ahmed and his mother pulled into this square, a convoy of four heavily armored vehicles was driving down the wrong, driving the wrong way on a one-way street. And Iraqi police officers scrambled to try to cut off traffic, not to protect the armored vehicles, but to protect Iraqis from getting too close to the armored vehicles, which often have men inside them who shoot at civilians who come too close to them. Well, this young Iraqi medical student didn't stop fast enough for the men in the armored vehicles, and one of the gunmen atop one of those cars fired a bullet and shot Ahmed Haitham al-Rubai in his forehead. That was followed then by more gunfire raining down on the car, and the car exploded with his mother, Mahassan, inside of it, and she burned to death in that car. That kicked off 15 minutes of sustained gunfire. At the end of it, 17 Iraqi civilians were dead, including women and children. 9-year-old boy was shot directly in his head when he sat in the back seat of the van that his father was driving, and his father described running to the local hospital because he could still feel his son's heart beating. And when he got there, his son was pronounced dead, and that man went back the next day to gather pieces of his son's skull so he could bury as much of his body as he could find in the Iraqi holy city of Najaf. The men who did the shooting in those armored vehicles were not active duty military, and they weren't members of Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. They were private forces deployed to Iraq by a for-profit mercenary company called Blackwater. And for many people around the world, that was the first time that they'd heard the name of this company, Blackwater. I had been investigating them for a number of years after the killing of four of their men in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. I'm sure many of you remember this on March 31st, 2004, when those four men were ambushed and killed and burned and dragged through the streets and strung up from a bridge. And the Bush administration used their deaths to justify an all-out assault on the city of Fallujah, killing hundreds of Iraqis, forcing thousands of others from their homes. And in many ways, it was really the day the war turned, because you saw a dramatic escalation in resistance attacks against U.S. Forces around Iraq. You saw Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army rising up, and the Iraqis were on the brink of a semi-unified resistance movement against the United States. And the spark for much of it was this collective punishment of the people of Fallujah in response to the killing of these four Blackwater men. And in the papers in the U.S., the drumbeat for revenge was beaten by the press, who described them as civilian contractors. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, I always thought of a contractor like my uncle, who installs air systems in high schools. He's a contractor. He gets hired. He does a job. But civilian contractor, it sounds like they work for the Red Cross, or they're like delivering aid to Iraqis or building bridges. But these guys were former Navy SEALs, former Army Rangers, working for a for-profit Corporation, and they were guarding trucks ultimately on a contract for the largest war contractor, KBR. And so their deaths then were used to spark this massive assault on a city that then resulted in scores of U.S. soldiers being killed. In fact, I was just in San Francisco recently with the Marines Memorial Association and met with a man whose son was killed in the Battle of Fallujah, as many families in this country have relatives who were. The reason I'm bringing up this story and talking about Blackwater is that there's Blackwater in this context is that there's some breaking news that came down yesterday. We understand that after 14 months of doing absolutely nothing, the Justice Department is now said to be preparing draft indictments against six of the men responsible for the killing that day. They potentially are going to be charged, well, hold off a second, they're potentially going to be charged with manslaughter or assault and could face 5 to 20 years in prison. 20 years in prison for gunning down 17 Iraqi civilians. That's the maximum charge that they could face on the indictment that's being prepared right now. Even if these six men, and it could be three men, or it could be no men, because it still depends in part on Bush's Justice Department, the least just Justice Department in the history of the United States, to move forward with this prosecution. But even if these guys go down, and even if they're successfully prosecuted, and even if they are convicted, what is it actually going to do to stop this system of radical privatization of the war machine? You see, Eric Prince, the owner of Blackwater, will still walk around with his cocky look running this little private army, and he'll pay no price for it. It's always the people lowest down that get hit with the charges. You look at the courts-martial that have taken place in Iraq. I believe that no one above the rank of major has been court-martialed for any crimes in Iraq. It's always the lowest people, the Lindy Englands, the Charles Grainers, the generals who implement the policy, or no, the defense secretary who gives the order for torture, or the secretary of state who covers up the crimes, or deployed these private armies. They never are charged with anything. They're never held accountable for their crimes. You know, when people talk about impeachment, and Nancy Pelosi comes in and she says impeachment is off the table, this isn't just some rhetorical thing that people are protesting about across the country. We're talking about actual crimes that were committed by this administration, and they need to be held accountable. And they say, well, it's not the way things work in Washington where you get retribution or revenge against the party that just left. We haven't had a president like this before. We haven't had an administration that has committed these widespread crimes in the brazen manner that these men and women have committed these crimes. And I think President Obama should be pressured like all hell to hold them accountable for everything that they've done to this country and the world over the past 8 years. People talk about how the Iraq War was a failure. I mean, now they're talking about the surge. That's a whole myth, and I can talk about that if people want later. The myth that the surge has succeeded in Iraq. They're paying people not to kill American soldiers. That's hardly a successful strategy, but that's for another discussion. Bush, though, has won an almost unimaginable victory with what he has done to the way U.S. wars are waged. We have seen one of the greatest transfers of public money to the private sector in the history of our country over the past 8 years. And they have looted the Treasury, but not just taken it and gotten fat off of it and sat somewhere. They've reinvested our money in private corporations who have used our money to build up infrastructure to the point where some of these armed contractors have military forces that could take out a small national government. In Iraq right now, I mean, this is an incredible statistic. In Iraq right now, there are 196,000 people working for for-profit corporations alongside 145,000 U.S. soldiers. These 196,000 individuals work for a network of 630 corporations on the U.S. government payroll. The U.S. spends $2.5 billion a week occupying Iraq. Between 25 and 40 cents on every dollar goes to these for-profit war corporations. They have people who are drawn from 100 countries around the world. In fact, it's probably the most internationalized conflict in the world, and yet I would challenge someone other than a history professor, a political scientist, or Naomi to name more than 10 countries that have actually been stupid enough to give Bush their troops as cannon fodder in Iraq. It brought down the Spanish government. Britain has almost no presence to speak of. Poland has a handful of troops. You don't have any military or any sovereign nation that was willing to go along with this farce, except for those that were bribed, blackmailed, or cajoled into doing it. And then you have Britain, which is the U.S. poodle. And when Aznar was there in Spain, he was the flea on that poodle. And so you had those three operating the occupation of Iraq. So instead of a coalition of willing nations, Bush and his cronies hired a coalition of billing corporations. And they turned the entire world into their recruiting ground. And so when the nation of Chile says, we're not going to participate in the Iraq war, in fact, we're on the UN Security Council at the time of the vote, and we say no to this, you say, fine, we don't need the Chilean military, we'll just take your soldiers. So Blackwater goes into Chile and hires Chilean soldiers to work for Blackwater on a U.S. government contract in a war zone as a party to a war that their home government is against. It's a subversion of the sovereignty of Chile and of nations around the world, and they've come, as I said, from 100 nations. But in the case of Chile, and Naomi mentioned it briefly, it's particularly perverse because some of the men who were hired by Blackwater were seasoned veterans of the Pinochet era. And the man that Blackwater worked with as a recruiter was a former soldier in Pinochet's military who also was in the U.S. military. He was a dual citizen. That was the man who opened the gateway for the Chileans to go to Iraq, working for Blackwater. And this is how they have changed the face of the U.S. war machine. It's not just about taking our young people and saying to them, if you want a college education, just sign this paper. And next thing you know, you're in Bakuba, Iraq. You thought you were signing up to fight floods as part of the National Guard. Next thing you know, you're in the middle of a war of aggression against the people of Iraq. Now, they turn the entire world into their recruiting ground. The other part of this is the money aspect of it. $2.5 billion a week, 40 cents on the dollar according to Henry Waxman, 25 cents on the dollar according to the Congressional Budget Office report that just came out. This money is then going to these companies like Blackwater, which, as I say, are using it to build up their firepower. Blackwater, over the past decade, from 1998 to 2008, has gotten 90% of its business through the federal government. They are essentially subsidized by us. And yet when Eric Prince, the owner of Blackwater, was called before Congress, he refused to tell Congress how much money he was making. We pay 90% of Blackwater's bills, and this man has the audacity to stand in front of the top investigative body of the Congress and say, it's a private matter how much money I make. No, Mr. Prince, it's not a private matter when 90% of your money comes from the American people and U.S. taxpayers. But what they have done with this money is to build a parallel infrastructure to the U.S. national security apparatus. One of Blackwater's newest projects is they've created their own CIA called Total Intelligence Solutions. And it is headed by three veterans of the Central Intelligence Agency. One of them, and I think the most disturbing person involved with this, is J. Cofer Black, 30-year veteran of the CIA, cut his teeth working for the CIA in Africa as well as Latin America. This was the man who ran the CIA's counterterrorism center on 9/11, was in charge of the hunt for bin Laden, and was at the center of implementing some of the most brutal and criminal policies of the Bush administration post 9/11. This was the guy who ran the CIA's extraordinary rendition program, the government-sanctioned kidnap and torture program, where people are abducted off the streets of cities around the world, hooded, diapered, shackled, put on a plane, and sent to a third country hellhole to be tortured while being questioned with questions often provided by U.S. interrogators to other nations' secret police. He was the guy who stood before Congress and said there's a before 9/11 and an after 9/11, and after 9/11 the gloves come off. He also, as Jane Mayer has revealed, gave orders to his CIA jawbreaker team to literally chop Osama bin Laden's head off, put it on a box with dry ice, and have it shipped back from Afghanistan. Well, that didn't quite work out that way, and he certainly didn't catch Osama bin Laden, although he said, Blackwater executive said recently that when Osama bin Laden is caught, a Blackwater operative will be 50 feet away from him at the time that he's captured. Robert Richer, former deputy director of operations at the CIA, is the number two man at Total Intelligence Solutions. Enrique Rick Prado, a veteran of the CIA's paramilitary division, a Latin America specialist, is the number three man at that company. These men, with decades and decades of CIA experience, with extensive knowledge of U.S. covert operations, sensitive national security information, their careers are now on the open market for bidding, not just from foreign governments or the U.S. government, but also from Fortune 500 corporations. In fact, their literature, Total Intelligence Solutions literature, actually targets Fortune 500, and then they expanded it recently to be Fortune 1000 corporations, and they say we can bring CIA-type services to the boardroom. So Blackwater is, in its own words, is like a one-stop shop for the government or for corporations. And Eric Prince says that his company is like the Federal Express of the U.S. national security apparatus. He said, we don't want to replace the post office, but when you really want a package to get somewhere, do you send it through the post office or do you send it by FedEx? He envisions his company as the sort of FedEx of the national security apparatus. They have a maritime division. They just recently deployed one of their 184-foot vessels to the Gulf of Aden to fight pirates. They've been in the news a lot recently. They have an aviation division. They have a domestic operations division. They made $70 million off of Hurricane Katrina. I saw them on the streets of New Orleans when the city, right after the city was flooded, wielding M4 assault rifles, Glock 9 strapped to their legs, telling me that they were there to confront criminals and stop looters. It turns out that Blackwater just simply decided one day to send its forces into New Orleans with no government contract initially. A private man, who is a radical right-wing Christian bankroller of the president, decides one day he's going to send 184 armed individuals onto the streets of a U.S. city to confront criminals and stop looters. On the eighth day that they were there, it almost sounds like a reverse biblical story. On the eighth day that they were there, they get this no-bid contract from the Department of Homeland Security to be the official bodyguard force for FEMA. Now, I don't know if FEMA has arrived yet in New Orleans, but Blackwater was certainly on the streets of New Orleans, and it was in the words of one of our colleagues, it was like Baghdad on the Bayou, where all of these corporations, and Naomi and I were there together, all these corporations that had made a killing off the killing in Iraq descend on the U.S. Gulf for disaster profiteering. Blackwater started a whole new division of the company out of this for domestic operations because it was so lucrative. Not just the $70 million that they got from U.S. taxpayers, they also hired out their services to wealthy individuals. In fact, they were hardly the only company down there. 180 mercenary companies, private security companies descended on the Gulf. I met Israeli commandos that worked for a company called Instinctive Shooting International. Operating an armed checkpoint on the streets of New Orleans, and they were hired by a private community. And the private community that hired him, one of the people that was behind flying these men in by helicopter and landing in a park across the street from this gated community, was the guy who told the Wall Street Journal that if the demographics in New Orleans don't change, we, meaning rich white people, are out of here. He's the guy who brought in the Israeli commandos and deployed them on the streets of a U.S. city. The point I'm getting at here is that we are in the midst right now in this country of the most radical privatization agenda in history. Every aspect of our life is being privatized. We see it in schools where they defund public schools and then they say, well, the schools are failing, so we need to privatize them. We see it, of course, with the incredible scandal and crime of the healthcare system in this country. We see it in law enforcement, where there's a radical paramilitarization of law enforcement through private training entities. We see it in prisons, where prisons have become a for-profit industry in this country, where some states build prisons to import prisoners as part to boost their economy. And now we see it in a very Frankenstein way with the U.S. war machine in Iraq. So you can say, well, Bush lost in Iraq, or Iraq was a failure. It was an incredible success. They looted the treasury. They built up the private infrastructure of these for-profit companies. And you know what? That they're all going to be on the boards in about 50-something days. You know, where did Dick Cheney, where was he hanging out during the 90s? Well, he was running Halliburton, and he was hanging out at the American Enterprise Institute. And you had Paul Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld, all these guys, when they're not in official power, they go to the parallel government, and they build up until the next time that they're in power. But what's to stop these guys from freelancing their foreign policy with these companies? What's to stop Chevron, the oil corporation, from just hiring its own little private army and doing what it's always done in Nigeria or elsewhere around the world and raising the stakes on it a little bit more? Why do they even need to bother with U.S. foreign policy anymore? Why can't corporations just have their own policy? And I think we're heading toward that direction in this world. Now, I do want to leave time here for discussion, but I feel like I need to say something about Barack Obama and Blackwater, because conventional wisdom would have it that Obama is going to aggressively go after Blackwater, is going to shut these guys down, and it's like the clock is ticking for them. I wish that were the case. I will say, in fairness to Barack Obama, that he is the author of the leading legislation in the Senate seeking to bring regulation and oversight to this industry, and he was very much ahead of the curve on this issue. Unfortunately, though, Barack Obama has said publicly that he not only will not sign on to legislation which exists to ban Blackwater and to stop the use of these companies, armed contracting companies in U.S. war zones, but that he cannot and will not rule out using them himself in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. You see, the problem here is that Barack Obama does not have an actual plan to end the occupation of Iraq. His Iraq plan will downsize it and rebrand it, but will sustain a sizable presence of U.S. troops for the foreseeable future. He will keep control of the Green Zone, Baghdad International Airport, and the monstrous U.S. embassy, which was built in part on slave labor, forced labor. And Obama has written himself into a corner where he is going to need companies like Blackwater, Triple Canopy, and DynCorp to implement his Iraq policy. He also, and I think this is incredibly disturbing, is characterizing Afghanistan as the good war. As many of the Democrats checked their spines at the door during the Democratic National Convention like it was a mink coat. And they're sort of like vegetarians between meals. They're anti-war between elections. You know, I could only find one Congress member, brave old Marcy Kaptur from Ohio, who represents Joe the Plumber's district. I love that. Joe, his name isn't Joe. He's not a plumber, and he would have benefited from Obama's tax plan. But he's threatening to run against Marcy Kaptur for Congress. But Marcy Kaptur spoke out about the Afghanistan policy of Obama. And when I said to her, what would you tell Barack Obama? She said, I would tell him to pick up the phone and call the Russians and ask them what happened in Afghanistan. She was the only Democrat that spoke out in relation to Afghanistan. And it's going to get very, very bad very, very fast. I predict that Afghanistan is going to get worse and worse as the U.S. escalation is implemented. Obama credits himself with pushing for more troops and saying that McCain and Bush followed his lead. So we have Iraq. The occupation is not going to end. It's going to be downsized and rebranded. Afghanistan is going to escalate. Obama, unfortunately, uses the Bush administration and the Clinton administration rhetoric on the war on drugs. And he talks about the war on the people of Latin America as though it actually is a war on drugs. It's a counterinsurgency war, and it always has been. Yes, there's narco trafficking. Yes, it needs to be combated. But the U.S. is using the war on drugs to wage a counterinsurgency campaign throughout Latin America, and it's no coincidence that Blackwater is bidding for a share of a $15 billion contract to, quote, fight terrorists with drug trade ties, and a program that could find them operating in Colombia, Bolivia, as well as in Central Asia. Pakistan, when Obama says that he is reserving the right to use unilateral force inside of any sovereign nation's border, I think that should all be a sobering reminder of what the past 8 years have looked like under the Bush administration. He has been posturing aggressively toward Iran, and his statements at AIPAC about Israel-Palestine were, I just think, atrocious. And then you look at the people that he's considering for high posts. Naomi mentioned Larry Summers. Rahm Emanuel. You can't get a more symbolic sense of where this is all going than the selection of Rahm Emanuel as the chief of staff. They are recycling all of the hawks from the Clinton era and bringing them back into the White House. Rahm Emanuel, Richard Holbrooke, Madeleine Albright, Tony Lake, Susan Rice, Hillary Clinton maybe as Secretary of State. Obama had a real chance and has a real chance to build a foreign policy team that is not like the 90s, where we had this belligerent policy and the Democrats were sort of out-republicing the Republicans. He has a real chance to do it, but unfortunately it seems as though he's bringing back the old guard. And this is what I think needs to be confronted. So in closing, I want to say that I think that in a way we've already had a coup that's taken place in this country. We live now in a corporatist society. The corporations, and we saw this very clearly in the elections and by studying the campaign financing, corporations are in total control. And I like the way that Naomi put it about the banks taking over, not the other way around. But, you know, there's that movie Usual Suspects, and Kevin Spacey has this great line at the end of it where he says, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. In many ways, the coup has already happened. And it's up to us to reveal it, to confront it. It's not about being Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. It's about fighting for what's right in this country. The election is done. Now the fight begins. Thank you.